Well, okay, thanks. And I'll start by saying that I appear to have grown Lawrence's beard. So
I don't plan to bring mine back for at least a year.
Okay, well, I plan to get rid of mine later today, but well, this isn't the topic for today. Well, as always, thank you very much for inviting me back. I must say I was particularly pleased to be asked this week because exactly 5 years ago, someone contacted me out of the blue saying that they were holding a minion in Hendon and would I give it to Vartera? It wasn't quite out of the blue. That minion was called Magen Avot, and that week was the pilot minion held at Hendon Hall Hotel. So I didn't have 15 minutes on that occasion, but I've tried to maintain that Dvartera as a central theme, and I've taken the liberty of expanding it a little bit beyond that as well. So Sedra of Baha'aloscha is named after the instructions at the beginning of the Sedra, where Hashem said to Moshe to instruct Aaron how to light the menorah. And what I find interesting about the Pesukim there is that having told Moshe to tell Aaron to light the menorah, and then having told us that Aharon did as he was commanded, it then goes back to telling us how the menorah was made, which is a repetition of what we were told in Parshas Terumah. So for some reason, the pasuk recalls the instructions for constructing the menorah, and then goes on to having just told us that Aharon lit it. So as I've said before, Mishkan and Mikdosh are far from the easiest concepts to engage with. And the fact that the Torah goes into so much intricate detail about how the Mishkan was made, I don't personally find that that's particularly helpful. I mean, if the purpose of Torah is to apply the teachings to our lives, then it's not clear to me anyway how we're supposed to apply the detailed blueprint for the Mishkan's construction to our lives. And it's not clear what the lesson or the message that we're supposed to derive from these details, and frankly, how we'd apply it in any meaningful way. So you might say, I mean, of course the Torah had to give us the instructions because we had to build the Mishkan. We needed to know how to do it. But clearly the Torah is quite selective about what detailed instructions it gives us, right? So there are other mitzvahs like tefillin, which are almost comically devoid of detail. And then you've got things like Shabbos, which, you know, it's probably one of the largest and most studied areas of practical halacha, and that hardly gets mentioned. And yet, not just here, but apparently in every case where Mikdosh or Mishkan are mentioned, the Torah or the Nevi'im expand at quite extraordinary lengths about the details. For example, in Melachim, there are six parokim which describe the Mikdash of Shlomo HaMelech. In Yecheskel, when the third Beis HaMikdash is described, here we go, Daniel, the Pasuk relays that over the course of seven chapters, how an angel gave a tour to Yecheskel. And what was the angel carrying, right? The Pasuk says, Vayoveh osi shomo, you brought me there. There was a man who was actually an angel, whose appearance was like copper. If the sil pishtim biyado, he had a strand of linen, I guess, in his hand. Ukenei hamidah, and a measuring rod. So the thing which he had to be carrying was a measuring rod. Isn't that strange, right? Somehow the measuring rod, which you know, clearly the layout and the precise dimensions are of critical importance here. And perhaps they reflect something fundamental about the essence of Mishkan, but frankly, I don't know what that is. It's hard to know what that is. And not only that, but I mean, we see the great details that it goes to, but the Rambam tells us in Hilchos Beis HaBechira that when the second Beis HaMikdash was used, these instructions weren't even detailed enough to act as a blueprint. And when it comes to building the third Beis HaMikdash, clearly they won't be either. So it's important that we've got all the details, but it's clearly not just as an instruction manual for how to build it. So I want to go down the path of the Midrash because I found three different Midrashim which string together tell us a really interesting story and I think shines a light, if you'll pardon the pun, on how to understand all of this. So the first one is in Bamidbar Rabbah, and in the interest of time, rather than reading it all inside, I'm going to try to paraphrase this, okay? So this tells us, based on this week's Sedra, about the construction of the menorah. So it's building on the Pasuk in this week's Sedra. And throughout Torah, there's a few different references to the building of the menorah. And what this Midrash does is it takes each of the phrases which describes the construction and it strings them together to reveal a hidden narrative in the text. So it says, the first reference is, menorah tahora yaradam min hashamayim. A pure menorah came down from heaven. What does that mean, right? So the Midrash says, Hashem said to Moshe, but I'll see some menorahs to Haftar and make a pure menorah. And Moshe, of course, said to Hashem, well, how do you do that? And Hashem says to him, well, you make it hammered out of gold. But despite this, Moshe found it very difficult. He took the instructions, he went down the mountain, he tried to build it, but he forgot how to. So he goes back up, he says to Hashem, please, can you just tell me again, how do you make the menorah? Well, I have mixed shot Hashem menorah, you make it hammered. So Moshe tries again, and again he fails because he's forgotten how to do it. So he goes back up, Hashem shows Moshe, he shows him how to do it, but Moshe still finds it difficult. So he says, Ureva say, see it and make it. Hashem took a menorah of fire, right, and he showed Moshe how to make it. But even with this visual guide, Moshe still found it difficult. And eventually Hashem gives up and he says to him, you know what, go to Bezalel and he'll make it. So Moshe goes to Bezalel, and seemingly without even giving him the instructions, Bezalel just starts work and he makes it. The perfect menorah emerges. And Hizchel Somea, Moshe was perplexed, but Omar, and he says, Ani kam upon him heroli HaKadosh Baruch Hu minis kashesi la'aseso. Right, how many times did Hashem show me how to do it and I couldn't? Va'at shelo ro'iso, and you who didn't even see it, al siso midatcho, you made it from your own volition. Betalel, he says to him, Betel kel, in the shadow of God, ha'yisa omed, you must have been standing in the shadow of God, kisheheroli HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when Hashem showed me how to make it. So it's a very clever play on his name. You're standing in the shadow of God. You must have been somehow watching. We'll come back because I think there's a better understanding of what the Tel Kel means. But what I find really interesting is the next, which is actually a Gemara in Brachos, which says that when we consider how important the details are, it's surprising to see that Moshe didn't transmit them perfectly. Right? So the Gemara says that when Hashem told Moshe to construct the Mishkan, he said to him, Aseli Mishkan, Oron, Bekelim. Make the Mishkan, then make the Oron, and then make the vessels. So Moshe went and he reversed the order, because when it says how he told that he gave the instructions, it says, Asei Oron, first make the Oron, and then the Kelim, and then the Mishkan. So Bezalel received this, and he says to Moshe, hang on a second, you want me to make the Oron and then the Mishkan, but don't you know that the way of the world is, first you build the house, and then you put stuff in it, not the other way around. So somehow, Bezalel realized on his own that it didn't make sense from a pragmatic point of view to do it in that order, and he changed the background to the way which Hashem said in the first place. But the perplexing thing here is, why did Moshe change it at all? And how did Bezalel realize that he had to do it the other way as well? And if the concern was just about, so from Bezalel's perspective, if the concern was just about logistics, but it turns out that was irrelevant anyway, because another Medrash tells us that the Mishkan was completed in Kislev, but it wasn't actually set up properly for use in Nisan. In fact, it was built and deconstructed and put into storage. So it didn't really matter which order you built it, because the Mishkan wasn't going to be the receptacle for the Oren and the Kalim anyway. Okay, so what's the resolution? And I think the key to unlocking this is a third medrash, which takes us back to the creation of the world, and which you'll recall was also conceived first and only built sometime later. We won't go into that now. And it says that it records a really interesting dispute between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemiah. Rabbi Yehuda says that the light was created first, and afterwards the world was created. And he gives a parable. Moshe Lemelech Shibikesh Livnos Palatin. This is compared to a king who wanted to build a palace. But of course, it was very dark. So what does he do? He lit candles, and that would allow him to know where to put the foundations and where to build the walls, etc. And similarly, the light was created first, and then the world was created using the light. Rabbi Nechemiah Omar, and Rabbi Nechemiah says, actually, no, the world was created first, which is equivalent to a king also builds a palace, but he builds the palace, and then he lights candles inside the palace. So now, you'll see this is quite an abstract sort of dispute, but you'll also see the parallels, right? Rabbi Huda says first he created the light and then the universe, as a king who builds a palace in the dark would first set up these spotlights. Rabbi Nechemiah says first he created the universe and then the light, because the king would build the palace and then he crowns it with light. What exactly is the argument? Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Nechemiah both seem to agree that the light was actually the ultimate purpose. The only disagreement is reflecting something else, which is, did Hashem use the light to create the world, or did he create the world and then illuminate it with light? Now, as I say, this seems like a rather abstract distinction, but it also seems that the Medrash is telling us that the difference in the outlook between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemiah is the same or similar to the one, the difference in the outlook between Moshe and Bezalel. And the link is the pasuk which the Medrash builds off on. So now that we've got all three Midrashim, we can link them together. The first one, if you remember, describes how Moshe could make the menorah, but Bezalel could. The next talks about how Moshe altered the order of the Mishkan, and Bezalel realized this and changed it back. And then this last one is comparing this dispute between Moshe and Bezalel to the dispute about the order in which the world and the light were created. And perhaps the connection is like this. Moshe was in a unique position insofar as he had received the Torah from Hashem on Har Sinai, and he therefore had access to the whole Torah. The reality is that after Moshe, nobody else would ever be in this position again. And it's important to realize that this isn't a compromise. It's in fact an essential feature of the way that the transmission of Torah is supposed to operate, right? And that's why I think you've mentioned this before, Daniel, that in Pirkei Avos it says Moshe Kibel. I'm not sure if it was you, but Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai. It describes Moshe's receipt of the Torah as a Kabbalah. And then every other transmission is described as a Mesorah, right? Mesorah li Zakenim, Zakenim Nabiim, Nabiim Anshik Nesakhtera. Because there was a qualitative difference. Moshe's receipt of the Torah was a complete one, right? But from that point onwards, the transmission was dependent on the transmitter and it was subject to their vagaries and their predilections and their particular intellect and their emotions. In other words, the transmission was affected by the transmitter. And this isn't a bad thing, as I say. It's in fact the way it's supposed to be. But the point is that for Moshe, everything was defined by the Torah, which came first. And that was the guide to everything else. With complete knowledge of the Torah, everything was supposed to be illuminated by the complete vision. And this is like Rabbi Yehuda, who said that the light was created first and illuminated the construction of the world. So of course, for Moshe, when you come to building a Mishkan, you'll start with the Oron, which contained the Luchos, because that's what's going to shine a light on how to build a Mishkan. In the same way as the king first builds, when he wants to build a palace, he puts the lights out first so he knows, and the building process benefits from the guidance that's offered by the lights. But on the other hand, Bezalel, and indeed everyone else, receiving the Torah is a voyage of discovery, starting with ignorance and building over time into knowledge. Of course, the Torah is the primary goal. Nobody disagrees with that. But first, you need to build the receptacle in which to put it. So just like Rabbi Nechemiah, Bezalel realized that for everyone who wasn't Moshe, first you need to work on the receptacle, whether that's the Mishkan or translating it into our terms, it would be ourselves. And in doing so, you create a space in which you can ultimately place the Torah. And of course, you accept that the start of this process is played with doubt and uncertainty, because you, when you start, you're not yet in possession of the light, the vision that would guide the process. And with this key, I think we can understand Moshe's reaction when he was unable to translate the vision of the menorah into physical terms, because that's not how the process of manifesting spirituality in the physical world actually works. He may have had an accurate vision of it, but it was a purely transcendent vision that had no practical method to convert it into something that was relevant to the physical world. But Bezalel, on the other hand, realized that complete knowledge isn't a precondition to starting on a project. And this was, you know, in practical, the practical terms was the hallmark of Bezalel. You need to start in the dark and feel your way as you go along. And of course, Bezalel was instantly successful. And of course, knowing this, that's why Hashem told Moshe, you're never going to be able to build the Mishkan yourself. You're never going to be able to build the menorah yourself. You have a different approach to everyone else. You need to get Bezalel to do it. And in the typical Bezalel fashion, when Moshe told him to make the Aron first, Bezalel realized that refused to do so for purely pragmatic reasons. And when Moshe witnessed this, his reaction is actually very telling, because he then says, Shema Bezalel Kel HaYisa, maybe you were standing in the shadow of God. That doesn't mean he was standing there watching. I don't think that's the key point, right? I think the answer is that we're all standing in the shadow. Right. Everything in life is characterized by uncertainty. There are very few black and white issues. So often we find ourselves in situations where the path to reach our ultimate goal is unknown. And Bezalel was teaching us that not only is it unknown, but it's unknowable. And that's not a deficiency. It's in fact an inevitable part of the journey. And the way to unlock progress is to make sure we're clear on the direction that we're heading. And even if we can't see the destination, we at least head in the right direction. And it's a voyage of discovery which we uncover over time. And I think to get to the closing point, this explains, I think, why the Medrash sees the construction of the Mishkan, and particularly the menorah, as a metaphor for the construction of the world. The construction of the world was Hashem creating a space for man, a very deep concept I won't even try to explain. But similarly, our construction of the Mikdash, or the Mishkan in this case, is our way of creating a space for Hashem in this world. The construction of the world was Hashem creating a space for man. Our construction of the Mikdash is us creating a space for Hashem. And if this sounds circular, and there's no time to go into it, if it sounds circular, Moshe was also perplexed by this, because how can one be inside the other and the other inside the first? But that's the conundrum of Mishkan and Kedusha, but we won't cover that now. I think to close, we're maybe a step closer to understanding the reason why all the detail is given for the construction of the Mishkan, and particularly the focus on measurements, as we saw with the angel who met Yechezkel. The process of building the Mishkan is all about measurement and geometry, because it's a process of building the space for Hashem in this world. The Mishkan is literally defined as the space and represents the point of contact between the physical world and transcendence. So the intricate dimensions express what geometry always expresses, which is the nature of place, with a capital P. And if the details seem superfluous and inaccessible, well, that's to be expected, because unlike Moshe, we don't start with a complete vision. Connection with Kedusha is something experiential. You develop a sense of it by experiencing it. So the lesson of Bezalel, who knew best than anyone what it meant to live in the shadow of doubt, this was indeed captured in his name. The Mishkan can be foreign, it can be inaccessible, the details can be obscure and they can be abstract, but the Mishkan isn't supposed to be an intellectual pursuit, it's a conduit for Kedusha and transcendence. And the lesson from the Bezalel is that to become proficient, you need to start. And you may not understand quite where you're going, but to coin a rather cheesy cliche, every journey starts with a single step, which is exactly what the Bezalel did. So back to where we started, that's the reason why when mentioning the lighting of the menorah at the beginning of the Sedra, the Pasuk also recalls its construction, because in this world, the building process isn't just a means to an end, done once and then forgotten about. It's a critical opportunity for experience and engagement. And the Pasuk is emphasizing that only when properly executed in this way can we finally arrive at the light of the menorah. I wish you a very good Shabbos.